KPCW News Time now, 8:12. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, as we've been reporting, the game has changed. That after some 50 communities across the country spent a lot of time and money vying for a $5 million prize being offered by the Georgetown University, a prize that now seems to have disappeared. In the studio to tell us what's going on, I have the executive director of Summit Community Power Works. That was the organization that was specifically formed to win this prize, and Park City Sustainability Manager Luke Carton. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning. And to clarify, I don't think we can tell you where it went, but we can tell you where things sit.
Okay. Well, I served on the, as you know, on the Summit Community Power Works Committee board there for 2 years, and it was always about the $5 million prize. Of course, it was. How to get that was to lower our electric and natural gas use. But when did you guys find out that something had changed?
So to do a really quick backup, you know, Georgetown University Energy Prize, 2-year energy efficiency competition between 50 communities. It ran through the end of 2016. We submitted the finalist paperwork right around Valentine's Day. And we were supposed to find out end of March or early April. And then we were supposed to find out June. Then we were supposed to find out August, then September, then end of October. And the real interesting trigger part was the October 1st, the rules changed. The guidelines changed from the $5 million cash piece that not only us but 49 other communities viewed as the big carrot to up to $5 million in financing, which is not even close to the same. It's either you could view it as like winning the lotto for $5 million or getting a mortgage for $5 million. It's a very drastic change. So once that happened, I started reaching out to fellow communities through my network, through Urban Sustainability Directors, just to make sure that, you know, were we wrong? Do we misread this? And everyone has the same issues. The prize change is one of them, but it's not the only one. The lack of transparency is a huge piece. You know, about a year ago, we talked about, hey, we're top three, top four. That dashboard got taken down. We've tried to reach out to Georgetown University team for clarification on a few pieces, and we would rarely hear back. We actually helped them with the application process. We kind of submitted some dummy information for them just to make sure the whole thing was up and running before they could start taking on the community's data. And we submitted the fake information. Then we actually did our full application, and we found out later that our data was wrong. So the other interesting twist that just happened is we actually received a Dear John letter saying that, hey, thanks, but no thanks. You're not one of the top 10 people. However, the interesting twist on that is the numbers that they pull in their letter are about a third of the savings that we actually made. So we're still scratching our heads. And the question is do we even resubmit our data and try to jump through those hoops, or is it just time to walk away? And that's a conversation that I don't have the answer to yet. We're talking to a lot of the key community stakeholders. We're talking to both councils. We're just trying to we're scratching our head just like everyone else is. And the interesting thing is it's just not SCPW. It's the greater community to have a prize change that drastically. And really kind of draw the ire of 49 other communities and us. There's just something funky going on.
Yeah. So do we know who are part of that top 10?
No.
And that's not publicized anywhere.
No.
Nothing is.
And, you know, it's been interesting to reach out to the various communities and just hear their frustrations too. And it's the exact, I mean, we could write the same letter. In fact, we were working on a joint letter to issue to Georgetown of being like, what's going on? You know, these drastic changes are, you know, it's not SCPW did not mislead the community. I would say SCPW and the community were misled from the $5 million cash prize to $5 million in financing.
Yeah. So what does Georgetown and the Energy Prize project manager, Christopher Nelson, have to say? Have you been able to track anybody down?
We haven't been able to get contact with him. I think the last time we tried was in September.
It's been crickets. And the interesting thing, too, is when you actually look at the overall Georgetown University Energy Prize, it's actually spurred a lot of great things. The 50 communities. And our goal was, hey, even if we weren't part of the top 10, we still want to learn from these other communities. And that's actually what we started doing without Georgetown. Like I said, we're talking to Columbia, Missouri, Cambridge, Massachusetts, Fort Collins, Colorado, and just saying, hey, what'd you do that worked? Here's what we did. And I think that the interesting thing is, you know, the plan was to always have SCPW continue on with or without the Georgetown Prize. The Georgetown Prize would have been a great bump. But when you really look at what SCPW does in this community, when we talk about affordability and carbon and all these other great things, it shows that energy efficiency and smart energy usage is it's a part of our community. It crosses partisan lines, crosses where you live, whether it be in Hoytsville or downtown Park City. So the great thing is SCBW is going to continue on. And we're just trying to figure out how we want to wash our hands of the Georgetown piece.
Yeah. So when you call Christopher Nelson's office, I mean, do you just get a voicemail? I mean, is it still his voicemail? I mean, is he still around or nobody knows?
They've gone radio silent. So we're, like I said, there's a certain point when you keep hitting your head against the wall and you say, hey, it might be, like I said, we're having these internal conversations with the SCBW board, both councils, the Park City Charitable Foundation. We're reaching out everywhere just to understand what folks view as the next step, because we put a lot of time and resources into this, but it was for a different prize.
Yeah, well, that's what I wanted to ask. How much has Park City and Summit County invested in this? Do we have any idea? I mean, I know that there were cash grants that were made to SCPW.
Yeah, I'm going to, you know, rough numbers, I want to say $150,000 to $200,000 combined, plus staff resources and staff time. And everyone says, well, that might be a lot. But actually, when you look at what SCPW can bring to the table, they can get different grant money. It's a very different feel when you have a nonprofit that can help drive energy efficiency. But, you know, staff time is actually the big piece. The great thing is that SCPW aligns with the city's goals and also the county's goals. And the great thing is SCPW will continue on in this new iteration with Aaron at the helm, because we've gone through some visioning and scoping, and we've got some great things coming out.
All right, we'll talk to Aaron just a little bit about that. But in terms of just Georgetown, I mean, this is a reputable institution. I mean, are there some repercussions for them?
I don't know. Well, I think having the backlash of 50 very angry communities now will be interesting to see. I agree with you that they are reputable, and there is now there's no longer trust between ourselves and the Georgetown piece because of the drastic change. And the other thing is when the prize was changed, we weren't notified.
No.
So that's another kind of, yeah. So we found out by, you know, skimming through the guidelines piece and, oh, updated guidelines as of October 1st, 2017, which we found, I don't know, a week or two later. And look at this. And it now directly says and is highlighted, there is no cash prize, which is a very drastic change from the previous iteration. So like I said, we were just as shocked as everyone else. And I wanted to do the due diligence to be like, what's going on, and reach out to other communities and really understand, because every time we reach out to Georgetown, we really, truly wouldn't hear back often.
Yeah. I mean, and you say, I mean, should we just wash our hands and move on? But I mean, any chance for some legal action against them?
I don't think so.
They got deep pockets.
Yeah. I mean, they do. And that, I mean, that was kind of the hope, was they do have a, you know, it would be great if they would reinstate the $5 million prize. Like I said, I don't know what's going on under their tent. But for us, it's just looking at $5 million in financing. We could probably help set something up like that more locally and try to benefit the local community rather than a nonprofit out of, I believe, Bethesda, Maryland. So we're going to kind of reassess. But, I mean, if the prize is no longer what we want, the question is how much more time to spend on it.
Right. And all along, there has been this lack of transparency. I mean, you even look at their Facebook post, and it's like, January of this year when they were at the Sundance Film Festival, and a lack of communication. And I think in terms of getting results back from how communities are doing, I think we only had like one data poll, huh?
Yeah, we had one time that said we were, I think, top four. And that was great, because then you could start, you know, if there was a community that was ahead of us, we could see what they were doing and say, hey, can we implement that program here? But that went away, and the total lack of transparency was extremely frustrating for a lot of the participants.
Yeah. So in terms of the 10 cities, I mean, do we know that there are 10 cities out there that are finalists?
Our email said you are not one of the top 10. So that's our assumption, but you never know.
But you haven't heard from anybody else that may have been part of the finalists?
No, and there's a lot of – everyone's kind of reaching out to each other, tracking down. Some cities have sustainability departments, other ones don't. So we're just trying to suss out what's going on. And like I said, for us, it's the not in the top 10 piece, but the numbers that are on that email are literally a third of what we accomplish in this community. So yet again, there's just something messy going on. We had to resubmit the data a few times, like I hit on before. It's just been a really messy process. And the question is, you know, it's for $5 million in financing now.
Yeah,
it's different.
We have some Georgetown University alumni here in town, don't we? I mean, can they help get you to the bottom of it?
I mean, I know that there is the Georgetown University Alumni Association will probably be receiving many calls from many different folks in many different communities. And that's what we've been, you know, like I said, for us, it's just the point of, you know, pushing the rock uphill, what will it accomplish for us. But I would also, if I was a Georgetown alum, I'm a Syracuse alum, so I'm a diehard competitor of them. I would be worried about the blowback on my university because this is that, like I said, you can read the Forbes article that talked about when this was launched. You know that it was spurred off of a President Obama speech, and now all of a sudden it's changed drastically. So for us, we like I said, I can't answer the question of what happened. I can only just be totally transparent on where we are and what's going on here.
Yeah. I guess the prize, though, Aaron, maybe you can address this, is that we have had some success. I mean, people have changed out their light bulbs. People have put solar panels on their roofs. You know, I mean, people have made those switches that SCPW had, you know, asked people to do over the 2 years.
Oh, correct. Yeah. And this is what coming down to, you know, Georgetown was always a competition. There was never guarantee that we were going to win in the first place, even though we are a very competitive community and we think we're going to win. But we did. We made a lot of huge strides, and that was fantastic. And we are excited to continue those strides and do even better because, like Luke said, the city has goals, the county has goals. We want to better our environment and add to our economic vitality in the community. So we are ready to continue programs.
Right. So what does this mean then for the future of SCPW? Again, without that kind of, I mean, because that's really what formed SCPW again, was to be a part of this competition. So with a competition now longer, Luke says that there is a future for SCPW. You agree?
Correct. Oh, yes. This is a need in our community. We are there to help everybody reduce their energy consumption in whatever form that might take. And because now we're not constrained to the prize, we can reach out to maybe communities that we didn't in the past, like businesses, because business meters were not part of the prize. So it allows us to do more deeper work in our community.
Yeah. Will you still go forward then with your 501c3 paperwork? And
yes, we submitted that a couple months ago. So we're hoping by January we will be a standalone without needing the Community Foundation as our fiscal sponsor.
Yeah. And I think you met earlier this week or maybe last week just to kind of coming up with some kind of strategic plan. Is that what's happening?
Yes, we've been doing that over the past 2 months. We've been having meetings. We're using Jim Collins' book, Good to Great, to help us form our hedgehog concept. And the other night, we came up with a new mission that we are going to inspire efficient energy use through practical and innovative programs to improve economic vitality and the environment in our community, which we're really excited about. And to the point where we don't want to sit around anymore, right? It's been about a year since we've been doing actual on-the-ground programs, and we are excited to announce a Christmas-related time. We're going to do Lights Up, Watts Down. Right, everybody's putting their lights up, you're decking the halls, but we want to make sure you're doing that correctly with LEDs. So that'll look for more information about that coming out around Thanksgiving.
Okay, so you're kind of gearing back up?
Correct.
All right. Anything else you guys want to mention? Oh, I wanted to ask you, meanwhile, I had read that Summit County kicking off this effort, Path to Positive Utah. Yeah. Are you folks part of that?
Yes. So both current Mayor Jack Thomas and future mayor-elect Andy Bierman are both part of it as well. Path to Positive is a concept. It was actually started in Los Angeles. It's to get business leaders, government leaders, religious leaders together to actually start talking about climate change on a more regular basis. I went down to the launch of it yesterday. There was some great speakers on that. But yeah, Park City, and it's the leadership piece. So it's kind of forming that group. So, you know, there are those thought leaders in the state to help make climate change, you know, because 70% of Utahns believe that climate change is affecting them currently, but it's never discussed. So this is the goal, is to make it discussed more often.
So what's this group going to do? Is there a goal? I mean,
we're the second location to ever really try one of these pieces. It's supported by a group called Eco America and a couple other folks. And it's really focused around the messaging of climate change. How can a preacher in a church relate to his congregation? How can someone who runs a media company that was there, how can they talk about this in a way that's not, you know, that's scientific based. It's not the crazy doom and gloom stuff, but it's also very real. And the flip side of it is the large potential economic benefit to the state. I got to speak at the state capitol last week at the governor's declaration for alternatively fueled vehicles. And the four people that came up to me after speaking were four Republicans. They firmly believe in electrification and the jobs it's going to create and the tax benefits and all these other pieces. So it's a start on that path.
Okay. Luke Carton and Aaron Bragg, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time, 8:28. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher with the Park City Council meeting and work session Thursday starting at 3 o'clock in the studio with a preview of the agenda. City Manager Diane Foster along with Historic Preservation Planner Anya Grand. Good morning.
Good morning.
So at 3, Diane, a short conversation about the proposed Three Kings Water Treatment Facility project, essentially a rebuild of the existing Spiro Water Treatment Plant. Staff just looking for some direction here?
Absolutely. So this is, at least 6-7 years ago, I think it was about 6 years ago, the City Council approved what's called a stipulated compliance order. And what that is that's a order for the city to clean up the water that's going into the creek. And what's interesting to me is that the Clean Water Act actually has standards that are higher than drinking water standards. It's really great for the fish, et cetera, and it's a challenging and expensive project. The city staff, under council direction, has been working there to renegotiate some of that, and they've been having some luck at the state level. And so what they're doing, because of the requirements for this plant, we actually have to expand the size of it. And right now that building, the Spiro Water Treatment Plant, hosts the parks team and as well as the water teams and golf maintenance. And so we've got to move golf maintenance and parks. And so this is talking about both the expansion of the plant as well as what we're doing with the golf maintenance team.
Okay, so this doesn't affect the golf course itself. It's not shortening any holes or anything.
What's really good is the initial plan, we were going to have to do that, and staff worked really hard, and Clint McAfee worked really hard with Vaughn Robinson and the whole team there, Clint Daly, and to say, hey, how do we not impact the golf course? Because we know it's a beloved golf course. It's one of the few private courses around, and it's a great course, so the intention was not to impact it. I think there's a little bit that's going to happen near a tee box or something, but it won't impact play at all.
Yeah. Any idea what this project's going to cost? Do we have any ballpark figures at this point?
I don't know that, Clint. I didn't see that in the report.
Yeah, I didn't either. So I guess it just needs to go to bid before you. But you've got a budget for it, I'm guessing.
We do have a budget for it, and it is an expensive project. It takes place over many years. I think our deadline is 2030. So it'll be a graduated process. And that being said, when half of your water comes out of mine tunnels, actually, I think we're probably down to more like a 30-35% of water coming out of mine tunnels. The city council agreed to take responsibility for it and clean it up.
All right, 3 o'clock, a joint work session with the Historic Preservation Board to review and discuss proposed amendments to the Historic District Grant Program. Anya, this is the program that provided money annually to homeowners of historic homes and businesses. It's been on hold for a couple of years since 2015. Because of some changes that were made and you didn't know how to implement, or tell me?
No. So we first made the changes because of some government accounting law modifications. And then we actually kind of revamped the grant program at that time. But when we actually started reviewing grants, we noticed that there was a lot of concerns and questions about how that money was actually being spent. And so we've kind of put it on hold to look at it again more closely. And now we've actually hired a consultant, Shirsty Monson, who's going to come out and help us facilitate a work session with the Historic Preservation Board and City Council to hopefully get some input and direction on how to best use these funds and, you know, make sure that we're incentivizing and promoting historic preservation.
All right. What you found is that you can't use capital money for projects that the city doesn't
own.
Yeah. So this is now coming out of the general fund budget.
It is. And the RDA budgets, depending on where the property is located.
And what you're looking for then is really a delineation of how money can be spent, whether or not it can be used to dig foundations, paint color, things like that.
You got it. And you know, we want to make sure that we're incentivizing it, but it also has to have a public benefit. We're not going to go in and, like, fix your plumbing and wiring. It's got to be more the exteriors of the historic buildings.
Yeah. The city had budgeted $127,000 for the grant program. So the fact that that money hasn't been handed out the last couple of years, will more be available once we kick it back in?
Not entirely sure. I think it's on a per-year basis.
It is, and that's something that the city council can decide to change that over time if they'd like to. And city council in their annual retreat, which is currently scheduled for February, they always give us their priorities. And based on those priorities, we use a budgeting for outcomes. So city council tells us what they want the outcome to be, and we allocate the dollars to it.
Okay. And is there going to be a cap on the number of grants that are awarded?
That is something that we can discuss with them and maybe get some direction on. Because we've talked about doing it a few different ways. One way was to, you know, maybe branch it out as far as smaller grants being reviewed and approved by the HPB for smaller projects like roofing and more maintenance items that are more detrimental. And then we've also talked about, like, the larger renovations that have a larger dollar amount and would need to go to council. But we will see what the HPB and the city council want, because I think there's a lot of different ideas coming out of both groups.
Yeah. Any idea how many properties have benefited from this so far?
Oh, I mean, I think at least 50, if not more, over the course since like 1987 when it was first developed.
Yeah. Hey, while I've got you here, what happened to Shorty and Ella Sorensen's house on Ontario Avenue? It's gone.
It's temporarily gone. How's that? It was panelized, and so the panels are being stored off-site while they excavate. They're hoping to get in the foundation and then cover it for the winter, and they'll start construction again in the spring.
Okay. But it won't look like it used to, that's for sure.
No, it'll be restored to how it looked during the mining era.
It looks, it's really, that looks like they're trying to save that tree.
Yeah, oh,
I mean, it's
they
like the
intend
old
to.
Biggest tree on that side of the mountain, so... Okay, let's see, a study session at 5 o'clock, Diane, on the Summit County, a presentation, I guess, with Summit County on their strategic plan, their budget, their Eastside Code presentation. I don't recall this happening before, the county kind of coming with its budget presentation. You don't do that for them, do you?
We don't, and I think what's going on here is, well, I know what's going on here, is that the county is asking actually to do this with all the municipalities. I think it's a great communication tool, and in a year where the county is proposing a property tax increase, they want to do everything they can to communicate the why behind that and what's happening in the community. So this is a great opportunity for the city council. You know, our city council has a great relationship with the county council. They know them well. They talk frequently. However, this is they don't necessarily, I can't remember, I think we haven't had a joint meeting for at least 6 months. And so this is a great opportunity for them to sit down and hear. You know, sometimes people forget Park City is part of Summit County, and they're an important partner of the city.
All right. Regular meeting starts at 6 o'clock. Staff has developed a pilot program to provide some groomed ski trails and a beginner's area at City Park. This is for kind of those youth after-school programs under the lights. Will it be open for everybody to use, however?
It's really exciting. It'll be open for everyone. And my first question when I was talking with Open Space and Trails Manager Heinrich Dieters was, oh, gosh, we can't have the lights on at, like, late into the night. It's actually only from 4 to 7, and if you think about the deep dark of winter, at 4 o'clock it's actually dark. So the idea that you could provide a community amenity right in everyone's, quite literally for some, backyard, and that it can support youth programs and just people who want to go out and ski. And I am a beginner cross-country skier, and the idea of Round Valley is horrific. The uphills are tough, and the downhills are completely scary. So something as flat as City Park is really quite attractive.
So who's doing the grooming and all the upkeep then?
It's probably Mountain Trails because the city has provided them with grooming equipment. I don't know if the staff report actually specifies.
Okay. And again, that'll be open as soon as we get snow then, huh?
Yeah, it's really exciting.
Yeah, and then lights will be off at 7.
Lights will be off at 7 o'clock.
All right. It'll be free?
Yes.
All right. Real quick, council scheduled to award a contract to an architect for the affordable housing at Homestake there, as well as Woodside Park Phase 2. Do we know how many units we're looking at? Or are you kind of, that's what you were waiting to hear back from?
That's some of what we'll see in the design. We have had some preliminary conversations with City Council about what types of units they want to see. We've talked in the Woodside Park area about a combination of townhomes as well as townhomes and small single family, but it'll probably be in a townhome kind of structure, as well as a building or possibly two buildings of some stacked flats. Very important that we got direction from City Council that make sure you have good storage, gear storage kind of things. So we're looking at, my guess is we'll probably see something in the 60 to 80 unit range. And the city owns quite a great swath of property that runs all the way from Park Avenue at the fire station all the way up to the resort. So that'll go in that section. And then at Homestake, we think it's probably in the 50 to 65 range as well. And on that, you'll probably see more apartment-style pieces. And for all of these, City Council, we will revisit with every project whether City Council, what area median income do they want to target? Do they – because the city's goal is not only affordable, it's attainable, and also there's product needed at the very low end. You may also see City Council look at, and they'll always have a discussion about rental housing. The challenge with rental housing is, let's say you put $1 million into rental housing, that $1 million stays there, versus if you, say, put $1 million into a product that you're giving a 20% discount on, then you've got $800,000 for your next project. So it is a funding challenge, although the City Council is quite aware of the need for affordable rental housing in town.
Okay. Wanted to briefly mention the council is scheduled to approve a franchise agreement with a company, basically, that would allow Verizon to use this fiber optics. And this would give better cell coverage along Main Street. Is the city doing this to make sure that its parking app and things like that work?
They actually came to us, and we've heard from a lot of folks in town about some concerns about Verizon service in town. And so staff is recommending that we move forward with this. We actually franchise with a number of companies, and this just happens to be an upgrade that is more noticeable than a lot of them.
Okay. And the Triple Crown Agreement back on the agenda, staff is recommending that City Park can now be used?
City Council, so this is a carbon copy of what City Council has already held a public hearing and a discussion on this one. City Council, it was not unanimous, but City Council did decide to allow use of City Park, and they were very interested in making sure that the environmental goals and the traffic goals were met. So those are also going to be in the contract.
Okay, and it's for 3 years.
It is a three-year contract as well.
Okay, anything else you wanted to mention?
I do, thanks. Starting this Friday on the 17th, we've got additional bus routes. We're starting our early season service a little bit earlier than usual. So and that ranges from the orange that goes to Silver Lake, yellow and Prospector, pink is the early morning service out to Kimball Junction, and that's one that stops more than the Electric Express, the Purple to Empire Pass, and early morning and late night. We're starting those starting this Friday. And then on this Sunday, the PCSLC Connect, the winter service will begin, and that's more frequent service. And then come early December will be those routes that we're putting into place now a little bit earlier than normal. We will actually go ahead and up the frequency of those in early December.
Okay, and also the November 30th meeting, council scheduled to vote on or take a vote or just discuss the future of the Homestake parking lot for this winter.
The Homestake parking lot this winter is for regular business is going to be used for the Main Street employees. We will have a question on that agenda. Staff recommendation is that during Sundance, which, you know, for every parking lot in town, there's a different world during Sundance. However, for Sundance, staff is recommending that it be reserved exclusively for Main Street employees. The reason we're doing that is that we think that there may be people who choose to park somewhere else or carpool, et cetera, that they may decide that the Sundance is the first time they actually use the Homestake lot, so we might even be able to get more trial. We're excited about the service there, and so that's staff recommendation. The challenge is it has been used historically. Sundance has had they've used that lot for years. There are some concerns, I will tell you. Transit staff and Sundance have been meeting nearly on a daily basis, transportation and transportation planning, to make sure that we've got good coverage during Sundance.
Right. But the city doesn't have any obligation to provide that for Sundance, does it?
We don't have any obligation to provide that to Sundance, and staff has a very strong recommendation, and we've done work even over the weekend on this, that staff has a consensus recommendation that we reserve the Homestake lot for Main Street employees.
Okay. Diane Foster and Anya Grant, thanks.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:43. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Joining me now on the phone from U.S. Ski and Snowboard, I have Tom Kelly. Good morning, Tom.
Well, good morning, Leslie. And it's almost winter.
Yeah. Well, we're pushing it back just another week here in Park City with the announcement that the resort's not opening as planned this week. But we do have some snow in other parts of the world. Let's get a recap of where we stand so far with this early season.
Yeah, you know, it's always interesting in early season. And we've actually had, I must say, pretty good training conditions, down in the southern hemisphere. Months of the 6 weeks ago, and over in Europe on the glaciers the last few weeks, and now over in Colorado, we're training at Copper Mountain. Things are going very, very well over there. And in kind of an innovative twist, we also took our freestyle teams, both moguls and aerials, over to Switzerland a few weeks ago and had one of the best early season camps ever. In fact, the earliest that the aerialists have ever been on snow. So even though it maybe still be a little bit warm back home, things have been moving along pretty well for us. But in the opening Alpine World Cups a few weeks ago, Michaela Schifrin finishing fifth to lead the USA. No, not where she really wanted to be. She's been on top of that podium over there, but, you know, a decent start to the season. She came back this past weekend in Levi, Finland, in the slalom, opening slalom of the season, first after the first run, and then dropping to second overall. But the nice thing for Michaela, she did move into the overall World Cup lead. So as she heads to Killington over Thanksgiving weekend, coming up in just about 10 days into the giant slalom of slalom, she will go in there as the overall World Cup leader. So pretty good start for her. We kind of look on the women's side, for there to be quite a battle for the overall this year. Michaela, the defending titleist there. Lindsey Vonn is going to be a factor, though, there as well. She is really healthy, ready to go right now. We'll see her back in action in Lake Louise the first weekend of December in two downhills and a Super G. So on the Alpine side, pretty good start so far, but anxious to get back into the USA and get to Killington next week for the women, and then the men at Beaver Creek the first week in December.
Okay. And I guess part of that, we, even though it wasn't really official, we do know that Bodie Miller has retired.
Yeah, it's, I kind of always say you never really know what Bodie's going to do, but he did decide to somewhat make it official and say he is done racing. And the good news on that is that he is going to continue his role as a commentator for NBC. So you'll see him on air, particularly from the races in Beaver Creek coming up in a couple of weeks for the men, and then through the Olympics and a few races in between. Now, it's been interesting for the fans who have watched him over the last few years. His commentary has been so insightful in helping tell the story of alpine ski racing. So putting him into that broadcast team along with Dan Hicks and Steve Perino is going to be a real plus for the fans who watch coverage from Pyeongchang. The other thing, just in kind of previewing things for the Olympics coming up now in a little bit over 80 days, is that all of the coverage will be live. There's no more delay, no hour delay for our time zones. Everything is going to happen live on one of the NBC family stations, so you'll be able to watch things in a live stream or on broadcast television pretty much as they happen.
Okay. And just with the new name change, U.S. Ski and Snowboard, doesn't seem like you're getting a whole lot of buy-in yet. A lot of people still referring to you as USSA.
Well, on one hand, we actually do have a lot of buy-in. We've done pretty well with the brand change and pickup of the new brand mark. A lot of people still like to use USSA just because it's common to them. We're kind of nicely trying to correct them, say, hey, USSA is not who we are any longer. We are U.S. Ski and Snowboard. And the impetus behind that brand change was really to present a more unified front across all of our sports, and it has had a dramatic impact for us in how we present our sport to our partners, particularly globally. We have restructured our entire commercial division at U.S. Ski and Snowboard, brought in an amazing individual as a new chief commercial officer this summer, Dan Barnett. He comes in with experience at America's Cup, UEFA Soccer, and a variety of other entities. So he's really been a good force for us in presenting more of a global picture for our organization.
Okay. Our regular Monday report starting up November 27th. We'll talk to you then. Thanks, Tom.
Yeah, looking forward to it. And pray for snow.
Sage Mountain, a nonprofit organization that educates the community about the positive impact a vegan lifestyle has on our health, our planet, and our animals. It's running a campaign called Compassionate Traditions. In the studio to tell us more about that is the co-founder of Sage Mountain, Lauren Locke. Good morning, Lauren.
Good morning.
So what is it? What is Compassionate Traditions?
Compassionate Traditions is a way for us to reach out to the community and encourage individuals and families to leave animals and animal products off our plates during the holidays.
So is it a national campaign or are we just doing it locally here?
It's local, but we have some followers that are, you know, throughout the country, and so anyone can join. And our point is right now is that 46 million turkeys are slaughtered just during the Thanksgiving holiday. And so here we are going to the holidays, you know, celebrating joy and being with our families and friends. And meanwhile, you know, we have these animals that are pretty much endure a life of suffering before they end up on our tables. And so we want to say, hey, you know, there are other options out there besides animals that we can celebrate during the holidays. And so, you know, I feel like the tradition during the holidays is about being with our families and friends. And so we're just trying to encourage people to change how we celebrate.
Yeah. So how many people have taken the pledge so far?
So far, we have just over about 5 people. So we just started. And, you know, you can go onto our website Get Involved. There's a tab called Get Involved, and under that it says Compassionate Traditions, and you can sign your name and also share, you know, a dish that you're going to have this holiday, whether it's for Thanksgiving or for Christmas. We're going to run this through Christmas as well. And also, you know, share your email address. And yeah, and then there's a video on there too that shows undercover investigations of what happens on these turkey farms.
So it's sagemtn.org?
Yes.
You don't
yes.
spell mountain out?
No, it's sagemtn.org, yes.
Okay. And then you're also asking people to use a hashtag?
Yes, mm-hmm. Use the hashtag Compassionate Traditions 2017. And if you're going to share any of your dishes during the holidays, please feel free to tag us. We also have recipes on the website, on our website, all the different holiday recipes, vegan recipes, tons of them out there. And a lot of them are traditional dishes that we all have, the side dishes, mashed potatoes, sweet potatoes, stuffing, and it's all vegan and all healthy and cruelty-free.
Yeah. What do you use on your mashed potatoes, though, besides butter?
Well, there is butter out there, Earth Balance, that is plant-based, and it tastes just as good. And it's healthier for you. And you can use different milks. So there's cashew milk, there's almond milk, there's rice milk, soy milk, instead of our traditional, you know, dairy milk.
Okay. And then what about pumpkin pie?
Same thing. Same thing. You use different milks. You can use, there's an egg replacement. You can also make your own egg replacement with flaxseed and a little bit of olive oil. So all these different dishes that are traditionally used during the holidays can be vegan.
Yeah. And then when we talk about animals, I mean, it doesn't hurt a cow to be milked. So why isn't that something a vegan would touch is, you know, mammal milk?
Right, right. Well, in the dairy industry, unfortunately, in order for us to get milk, a cow has to be pregnant, right? So and once in the dairy industry, once that cow is pregnant and once she has her baby, that baby is taken so we can then have her milk. So if you watch cows and families and communities of cows, you see that these cows are very caring towards their young, just like any mother would be. So when this baby is taken, it's horrifying to watch. It's very sad to watch. They're separated and the male calves usually go to be veal. And the females will be put into the dairy industry just like their mom. So these cows are impregnated every, you know, year artificially. And then baby is taken. We take the milk for profit. And so these families are separated and suffering, you know, obviously is endured by these animals. And about 4 years of a cow being in the dairy industry, her milk is no longer considered quality milk. She's then sent to slaughter, And usually her meat will go to be cow, dog food or like some low-grade meat.
Okay. Yeah. All right. People, again, can get lots more information on the website, sagemtn.org.
Yes.
All right. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays. Thanks, Leslie.
KPCW News Time now, 8:54. Good morning. Well, the 16th annual Park City Board of Realtors Turkey Drive happening this week, and in the studio with details, event organizer Deb Hartley, along with president of the Board of Realtors, Sarah Warbelow. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Yeah, so, well, probably not great timing. We're just talking about taking turkey off our plates, but you know what? A lot of people aren't going to do that.
Well, so here's the reality. I mean, you're right. It was perfect timing, but there are choices. And we live in a community that can afford those choices, and the population that we provide to, gosh, those aren't options to them at this time. I mean, they're looking for something that fulfills them and sustains them for a very long period of time. And I love a plant-based diet, but that just doesn't work for a lot of people in some of these outlying communities.
Yeah. So give us a little bit of background, the turkey drive and why you do it.
So just for that exact reason, first of all, 1 in 7 children go to bed hungry in the state of Utah. And that's, gosh, that's a travesty in this state, much less in our own community. So we have started this turkey drive 16 years ago. And I think the first year we collected 65 turkeys. And this year we're on track for 2,500. Believe it or not, of which 850 will stay right here in Summit and Wasatch counties. Mind-boggling, isn't it?
Yeah. The rest of them go where then?
Well, the rest of them go down to Utah Food Bank for statewide distribution. So,
yeah, that's huge. That's
ginormous. Yeah. And if you think about a turkey feeding, just turkey dinner, 6 people, that means we'll provide just a turkey dinner to 15,000 people this season. And that's pretty enormous.
Yeah. So you'll be when and where to do this?
So, go ahead.
Sarah?
Okay. the kickoff is tomorrow, November 16th, and then also the 17th at the market at Park City from 10 to 5.
Okay. And so what is it that you're looking for money or you're looking for turkeys?
So first of all, Mike Holmes at the Market of Park City has been our ardent supporter of this since the very beginning. So for all of you that shop at or would like to reach out to Mike Holmes, gosh, give him a pat on the back because they're just huge supporters of the community and certainly this turkey drive. So a lot of people do it a lot of ways. You can go to our website, parkcityturkeydrive.info, and there's a link to PayPal. And lots of people have already donated there. Or what we're finding as this turkey drive gets legs, excuse the expression, there are families that come with their children and go into the market and buy a turkey and a bag of groceries. And they're teaching their children the fine art of community spirit, donation, philanthropy, and giving to those that are less fortunate than ourselves. So it's very powerful to watch.
Yeah. So people can either donate,
or
they can go shopping and drop the food off.
Some people just drive right by, throw some money in the jar. We get enough of it, then we go buy turkeys. So our goal is $2,500 this year. Come on, Park City. I know we can do this.
Yeah. So because it goes through the Board of Realtors, is it considered then a charitable
yes,
donation?
Yes, exactly. Thank you. And this is the Park City Board of Realtors' singular community fundraising event. So this is a huge opportunity for our realtor members to give back to the community. But yes, it goes through our 501c3, our philanthropic foundation. So by all means, tax deductible.
Yeah. And the good news is we have zero overhead. So 100% of your donation goes to buying turkeys. I mean, how easy does that get and how awesome is that? No overhead, no stamps, nothing, no printing, zero.
Okay. Well, you must have had a meeting because you don't have your turkey outfit on, but you will for the next couple of days.
Oh, yes, I will. Come see me in full color.
Okay. Anything else that you should
mention? No, just thank you to the community. Thank you, KPCW, for having us on. And a huge thank you to Mike Holmes at the Market of Park City for being our ardent supporter. We love him dearly.
Okay. Hey, good luck. Thanks.
Thanks, Leslie.